Following his marathon solo recital at last year's festival, pianist Alessio Bax begins this summer's Carte Blanche concert series with a three-part program anchored by the solo piano music of Johannes Brahms. The first part of the program pairs Brahms's eight pieces, Opus 76, with Béla Bartók's Dance Suite, composed in 1925. Part 2 juxtaposes Brahms's four ballades, Opus 10, with the third violin sonata of Romanian composer George Enescu, for which Alessio will be joined by violinist Yura Lee. For the final part of the program, Alessio will be joined by his wife, the pianist Lucille Chung, for Brahms's Opus 39 waltzes for four-hand piano. The program ends with Brahms's Variations on a Theme by Paganini. Alessio Bax.
I was very excited to be able to present another Carte Blanche here in Menlo. I love the process of coming up with a program because it's, you know, you have to really think deeply about what you want to do. We don't have that many opportunities to do that without having any time constraints or repertoire constraints. So that's very exciting for me. Well, I started with the idea of one of the themes of the festival, which is going to be Johannes Brahms, and that already got me very excited because he's always been one of my favorite composers. I know I say that about every single composer I play, but I feel very close to the music of Brahms. His writing for the piano and the way that he uses the piano, not as the piano itself as an instrument, but as a tool to convey his music. So sometimes the piano has to assume an orchestral role, a choral role in the strings and so on and so forth. That's what really I love about playing the piano in the first place. So I wanted to center it around Brahms. And the first difficulty came about that, Brahms was one of these composers that destroyed most of his music, we can say. I mean, he wrote so much, but if he wasn't happy with it, he would burn it and throw it away and destroy it. So not that much music with piano has survived. So that made me think about how to expand on Brahms. Even though I wanted to focus it mainly on Brahms, I branched out with two composers that are also very dear to me, Bartók and George Enescu. They were born in the same year, 1881, and more or less in a close geographical situation between, you know, Enescu was Romanian and Bartók Hungarian. But they developed in very different ways from Brahms. I think they were deeply rooted in Brahms' tradition, especially Enescu met Joachim, he studied in Vienna, his earliest concerts programmed Brahms and so on and so forth. But then, because of what happened in Europe at that time, of the First World War especially, they started to look more inwards into their own country's folk music and folk traditions and how to make their language part of the music that they knew, the romantic music that was at the core of their education, let's say, and how to make the language their own as well. There's a wonderful statement of Bartók. It was very practical in his statements of how to incorporate peasant, he called them peasant tunes, in his music. One was just to use the tunes, for example, that as they were, and just write an accompaniment for them, which he didn't do that often. The second way was to write imitation of folk tunes, which he did quite often. And the third, which was very, very Bartókian, and it's what made me think about this coupling of composers, was to not to borrow any folk tunes, not to write anything that sounded like a folk tune, but to immerse the music in the atmosphere of the peasant folk tradition. Now, that's very easy to say, but how do you do that? And I think he was really a master. With just a few notes in his music, you feel transported to those tradition, and you know exactly that's Bartók. The Bartók Dance Suite was his own piano version of the orchestral dance suite that was written for the 50th anniversary of the unification of Buda and Pest into the capital, Budapest. And what I find incredibly fascinating is that it really summons up all the work that Bartok did in ethnomusicology, which is something that he was almost responsible for funding. And in that, every movement is in the style of a different country. So there's a Bulgarian, there's a Romanian. The first movement is clearly Arabic. His travels brought him to really remote countries. He worked in Algeria, for that time remote. He worked in Turkey, in a place called Adana, which I happen to have played. It's in the southern border of Turkey with Iraq. He's not using folk melodies, he's not trying to recreate them, but he's setting the mood of the peasant tradition of Hungary, of Romania, of Bulgaria. In the finale, all these themes come back as if, you know, in the brotherhood of countries. And that's really an amazing feeling to see how, I guess you can look at it in a deeper and almost naive way as the brotherhood of people and how things can actually have different languages and work together perfectly well. Bartok and Enesco had in common that they're incredible prodigies. Enesco was really the complete musician because he was an incredible violinist, of course. He was very good pianist, very good cellist. He was a great conductor, a composer, and one of the most important teachers as well. And he graduated from the Vienna Conservatory by the age of 13. And by then, he was already starting to compose major works. His development as a composer is very interesting because he kind of explored different territories in a way like Stravinsky did. So he went through the neoclassical phase, first through the post-romantic Brahmsian phase, which also Bartok did. His first pieces were very Brahmsian in flavor. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to juxtapose these two composers and see how they, from almost the same starting point, they developed in different ways. His third sonata was written during his folk period. But everything that he learned from all the different styles incorporates in this music and really makes it classical from the first note to the last. His writing is very special. I really don't know any piece that sounds quite like this one. I have to say it's one of my favorite works of chamber music. Enesco in his third sonata, which he even called it in the Romanian folk style, he does a similar thing. He writes music that sounds like gypsy improvisations, except it's so carefully notated. I never in my life came across a score that was so carefully notated for both the piano and the violin. and the piano, he writes half pedal changes, all kinds of you might find every bar that will have 20, 25 markings sometimes. Mm-hmm. And the goal of all of that precision was to make the music sound as free, as improvised as possible. And Bartok, even though he's very strict as a composer, was very much the same way. I find that the challenge in both Bartok and Enescu is to know the music so well that you can actually set the music free.
When Alessio first proposed a program complementing Brahms with the music of two great Eastern European composers, my first thought was that he was going to explore the gypsy element in Brahms' music. Brahms' lifelong fascination with Eastern European folk music inspired numerous pieces throughout his career. We'll explore that element of Brahms' language on this summer's fifth concert program, A la Zingarese. But when I asked Alessio, he explained that this was not, in fact, the intent of the program.
It's always a strong temptation when programming Brahms with Eastern European composers. I wanted to look more into, deeper into raw emotions and how powerful the music is. Not that this gypsy music is less powerful, but the way that all these composers wrote and how accurate, how deep they went into the music. Even the waltzes, Opus 39. You know, Brahms is writing within the limitation of the waltz dance, and in a way, you can think there's not so much you can do in terms of emotions in the music. But in these 16 beautiful miniatures, it's amazing how subtle Brahms can be and to convey really all human emotions within what is a waltz sequence.
Brahms composed his Opus 39 waltzes for piano four hands in 1865. It is one of several works composed for two pianists at one keyboard. Brahms' catalog of four-hand piano pieces also includes the Opus 23 Variations on a Theme by Robert Schumann, the Liebeslieder waltzes, and the Hungarian dances.
I think he was very particular about four-hand writing. He wrote the music for a practical reason, to enjoy in a living room with his friends and so on, but he knew the piano so well that really you cannot change a single note without upsetting the balance and the subtlety of the writing, which is still astonishing for me. You know, the simplicity of these waltzes, Opus 39, and what you need to do in order to make them sound beautiful and effortless. It's an incredible amount of work, and it's very challenging work. Opus 76 is an incredible piece. For some reason, it's not as well known as the other piano pieces. It came after 13 years that Brahms hadn't written any music for solo piano. And he came back to piano writing in a very sophisticated, polished, and just incredible way. And so I thought it would be a very nice choice for Brahms' works for piano, because I'm playing Opus 35. And then Opus 39, which were the last two pieces that Brahms wrote for piano before this 13-year break. And then Opus 76. So a new rediscovered Brahms. Of course, same person, but after 13 years that he had learned from writing all that incredible chamber music, two symphonies, and a lot of the greatest music I've ever written.
Is there a character to the early pieces of Brahms that you feel distinguishes it from his later work?
Honestly, I don't think so. I think even if it's not so apparent, that intimacy was always there and the subtlety was always there. It was a little rougher and more raw. Think of the ballads, for example. I mean, there's in the first ballad, which is the Edward ballad about a son killing his father. Very dramatic stuff, but in the middle section, it builds up a crescendo, which could be, I mean, the most amazing orchestral crescendo. And the way it does it so masterfully on the piano, you know, adding a note for each phrase and then widening the range of the keyboard and so on. Fourth ballad, which is marked con intimissimo sentimento, or something so intimate, so subtle, so amazingly personal that it's really astonishing that they're both in the same piece. I see the four ballads as one work. You can break them apart and have the same impact. And it's a young, early work, so it's really amazing. But they're very raw in many ways, and that's a great appeal that the piece has to me. They're rough, they're strange, weird harmonies, weird modulations, and very otherworldly effects, I think, for young Brahms. And you see in the later piano pieces, Opus 116, 17, 18, and 19, that it becomes more focused, more economical with his writing, but you can definitely tell it's the same person. I think that inner energy, almost religiousness of intent and power was always there.
Audio notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following performers and organizations. Johannes Brahms's Variations on a Theme by Paganini and Bella Bartok's Dance Suite are performed by Alessio Bax and appear courtesy of the artist. George Enescu's Violin Sonata No. 3 is performed by Adelina Oprian and Justin Oprian and appears courtesy of Helios Records. Brahms's Opus 39 Waltzes, performed by Alphonse and Alois Kontarski, Brahms's Opus 76 Piano Pieces, performed by Tomas Vasari, Clara Schumann's Romance Opus 22 No. 1, Felix Mendelssohn's Auf den Flügeln des Gesanges, and Josef Joachim's Romance Opus 2 No. 1, performed by Daniel Hope and Sebastian Nauer, appear with kind permission of Deutsche Grammophon GmbH Hamburg, www.deutschegrammophon.com. Brahms's Opus 10 Ballades, performed by Stephen Huff, appear courtesy of Hyperion Records. Brahms's Violin Sonata No. 1 in G Major, Opus 78, is performed by Joseph Swenson and Jeffrey Kahane, and appears courtesy of Music at Menlo. Brahms's Piano Quartet in G Minor, Opus 25, performed by Gilbert Kalish, Ian Swenson, Paul Neubauer, and Colin Carr, and Antonin Dvorak's Piano Quartet in E-flat Major, Opus 87, performed by Gilbert Kalish, Georgia Flizanis, Geraldine Walter, and Colin Carr, appear courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Brahms's Opus 114 Clarinet Trio and Max Bruch's Opus 83 pieces are performed by David Schifrin, David Finkel, and Wuhan. Brahms's Clarinet Sonata in F Minor, Opus 120 No. 1 is performed by David Schifrin and Carol Rosenberger, and appears courtesy of Delos Music. For more information, please visit www.delosmusic.com. Gabriel Fauré's Dolly Suite is performed by Duo Mento and appears courtesy of Eroica Records. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.